Hi, it's Dave. I'd like to introduce a three-part series of videos from a conversation I had with Zach and Jesse Cotaldo. They run a YouTube channel, Now You Know, about Tesla and renewable energy. Every week, they present Tesla Time News, which is an in-depth look at the latest Tesla happenings. Today, I'm releasing part one, where we discuss Tesla competition and what makes Elon Musk so unique. Parts two and three will come tomorrow and the day after. These conversations are my attempt of trying to go beneath the surface of things and understand the world around us better. What's your guys' take on competition? Let's say, you know, going forward 3, 4, 5 years into the future, do you see any kind of like legitimate competing players, you know, in the auto market, especially in the US?
I don't. Not really. Well, the sucky part, especially in about the U.S., is we were set back 4 years. There's a reason that pretty much all the new EVs are going to Europe. It's because they had the standards. They have the emission standards. Right. And we're seeing just now, like with Honda, Honda couldn't ramp the Model 3. Hello. And so therefore has to pay Tesla for the regulatory credits, and it's a significant amount. We don't know what it's going to be, but if it's anything like FCA, it's billions of dollars straight to your competition, or I assume it would be even more to regulators. So they're, you know, all these companies, the only reason that they're making EVs is because of the European emission standards, and so that's why in the U.S., we're like, where are all these electric cars? You know, why don't I get the E? Why don't I get the ID3? It's like, yeah, they're coming. We'll put them to you later. And they'll give us numbers of like, or they'll give us, you know, time frames of when to expect it. But they could push back those time frames whenever. So the time frames have constantly been pushed back for me. And I've just been like so unimpressed with the competition because of that.
And just goes to innovation. I mean, these car companies are used to giving us just little tiny new improvements every year so that we don't have the Osborne effect, basically, which is that we don't wait for this model. And they're not used to innovating at the speed that Elon's innovating, because he's not innovating at a linear speed. He's innovating at an exponential speed,
right?
Which means that they're not ready for that.
They haven't caught up, which means that they have to do a step change in order to be anywhere close. Right. And that's really hard to do.
They're basically trying to buy their way into these step changes, you know, Ford with Rivian, GM with, you
Nikola.
Know, yeah, I mean,
it's just the joke of it. Where, you know, where can we possibly buy what we want? Because we're so used to buying our suppliers, you know, like,
I mean, and look back at the $50 million that Daimler put into Tesla to get themselves into an electric smart car, or that Toyota bought in to get an electric RAV4.
And those were just for the Californian market, because right. The California, you know, the CARB set such high regulations. They were only doing it for the regulations. And when you see a company being led by a stick, or not led, you know, hit with a stick to move forward, they don't make the best things, and Tesla almost transcends the carrot in a way.
Well, and you know, one of the biggest things that Tesla has is something we hardly ever talk about because it seems so not sexy, which is the supercharger network. And it's one of those things you can't talk about to a non-Tesla driver. They don't know what you're talking about. You can say it over and over, but if you say to the Chevy Bolt owner, how do you charge when you drive to Maine? They're just like, I plug into a level 2 charger.
Right.
And you're like, but you don't do that in a Tesla. You charge for 15 minutes.
Right.
And they don't get it till they do that trip to Maine. And then they go, oh, it's really a pain, isn't it? So the supercharger network is this huge innovation that Tesla has. All these other car companies point to
Electrify America.
Electrify America and Ionity and stuff. And they're like, see, there's a charging network. We've used it. It's not the same.
Right.
It sounds maybe the same because you have dots on a map, but it's not the same.
Right. When you get there, it's not the same in just the way that it works. I mean, a Tesla supercharger is so smooth in one sense. And you're like, OK, who cares? You know, you're a customer. You're used to going to a gas pump, for goodness sake. But smooth in the fact that there are hardly any hiccups most of the time. Mm-hmm. And there aren't, you know, you're not looking at a screen, you know, oh, I put in my card now. I take it out. I blip a thing. Did it work? None of that. It's just, it's like the, And we've gone to some, Electrify America chargers where they just aren't working that day.
Right.
It's like,
you're just out of luck.
You're just out of luck. It's like, oh, well, if I ever have an experience like that, that shakes me to my core. I'm like,
right.
I can't travel. Like,
right.
Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. We've been to, I think, one Tesla supercharger where it didn't work. But this was after we've been to 150 superchargers and just use them constantly and rely on them on vast long
road
trips.
And we only drive 7 miles
to the next one. Right. Right. This one was in a dense supercharger area. So, like, yeah, we've had one bad experience with superchargers, but it was after hundreds of other good experiences. So that really, I think, is this really hard to measure thing, because you'd need to conduct some study of, like, you know, all the people who are going to use Electrify America and be like, you know, how was your charging session? Did it work? Did you have to move to a different thing? Did you have to call? Did you, all of this stuff? And I think it'd be a great study. And compare that to the supercharger network. I think that you'd see a complete discrepancy in quality. And even if it were slightly different, that level of confidence difference would be astronomical to the amount of, like, how a consumer is going to feel about their car, right?
Yeah, I think what's interesting with these OEMs is they're not really tech companies or innovation companies. Like, their focus over dozens and dozens of years is more massive logistics, you know, moving operations, you know, supply chain management. And
that's it. That's what they should be called, is supply chain management companies.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the stuff that improving the parts, they're just using their supply chain, you know, and then the suppliers are improving parts. But I think in the midst of, like, massive innovation and disruption, it's like those type of players have, like, basically almost no chance, because, like, first you have the electric vehicle, right, revolution that's shifting entire powertrain, right, away from fossil fuels to battery. And then you have this whole autonomous driving revolution, which is completely software and tech and AI and machine learning, all that. And then on top of that, you have, like, this battery revolution, right? This massive, like, improvements and scale and batteries. And then on top of that, like, you have this whole factory revolution that Tesla's doing, which is, like, you know, recreating factories, but, like, in this super efficient way. And Tesla's, I think this is often underappreciated, they're on the road to radically transforming what happens in a factory and what a factory really is, you know, with robotics, software, AI, all this stuff.
Right.
And when you look at all of these individual disruptive changes that are happening on a massive scale, and you expect these auto OEMs who have, like, only expertise in supply chain management, operations, yeah, logistics, right, to have a chance, it's just like, oh man, it's like a, it feels like it's gonna be like a bloodbath, you know. It's just, I don't know, what
it
do you
is.
Think?
Well, because at every one of those steps, it'd be one thing if these were all startup companies and they're all out of the gate and here they go. But they're not. They're these big, massive things, this big ball and chain. And the big ball and chain is gas car sales, which you might think is the ball and chain is ahead. And that's great until, I can't move any further.
Right.
You know, like, every step I take is one step backwards, because I'm no longer selling those gas cars, because
exactly,
now I have to switch to electrics.
We liken that to, you know, being out in the forest, being stuck in a bear trap, and it's like they have to just chew off their leg and they won't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Fascinating. Like, the historic changes we're seeing, you know, in the markets. What's one of the things I look at with these OEMs is, I don't think there's going to be a competition for Tesla until these OEMs come up with an EV that's at the same price and same or better performance than their existing ICE vehicles. Meaning, like, take BMW with the BMW 3 Series. If BMW is serious of having a chance, they need to come up with a BMW, like, whatever they call it, but it needs to be as good as their 3 Series ICE vehicle, but, you know, at the same price or cheaper and better performance. Right. And
right,
part of that is the supercharger network. Without that, like, you don't have that performance, meaning you just don't have the confidence to travel long distance. And so it's like, what's concerning is, like, how long it's taking these OEMs to realize that we need a supercharger network. We need a compelling vehicle that's better than
right,
our ICE vehicles. And it just seems like they're just every year they're digging, you know, the dirt. They're digging their grave, you know, deeper and deeper without really, you know, making progress.
And they're seeing the wrong things, because I know for a fact that, you know, if you know they came out with a comparable car, and like you said, they don't have a network. Right now, with Electrify America, there's so few drivers using it that the capacity is swell. I can go, and there's never anyone there, so I'm almost guaranteed a spot to charge. Most of the chargers have like 4 fast charging stalls, which is at least half of most Tesla supercharging stations, if not a third. So that would be a huge issue when you start to have enough drivers using it. Then it comes to the reliability aspect of those chargers themselves.
I mean, this is one of the things that I think is exciting me the most nowadays, is this idea of Elon spanning multiple industries, but doing like unbelievable things like in each of those industries. But when I think about it, it's like the things he's doing, it's on a humanity level, like on a kind of existential level, right? And for one person to work on one of those things in their lifetime is quite amazing. But for someone to do it on multiple like levels, like existential level problems, and then to go about that with a solution that is like very, in a way, product driven. So it's working with the system of capitalism and economics to provide kind of a outrageously compelling product. Right? And you look at that with, let's say, the Model 3. You look, you know, with that, like with Starlink, you know, it's like, what is this, you know? And he does this consistently across all of his, and what Neuralink is trying to do is just like this astonishing, you know, product that is going to make money. It's actually going to be a business model, right? And these aren't small business models. These are trillions of dollars of business models that are solving existential, right, humanity problems in unbelievable ways where the normal person just can't grasp it and believe it, right? And this is happening right before our eyes in history. And I think about it, I'm like, has there really been like many other people like this, like Elon Musk and the companies he's founding and the things that are happening right now? Like, this is something quite unique and special, you know, on a historical level. And I'm not sure if like people are in general are really catching what's really happening before our own eyes. Like, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, we've dedicated the past 4 years of our lives. You know, we do a show every single week called Tesla Time News, and that's, you know, it's not called EV News. We understand this, and
it could be practically called Elon News.
Right.
He's got, I mean, his brand is developing still. Like, him as a brand, moving up in the world, I think that we can say. But wait till we kind of break through, when we have a breakthrough moment. And it could be the robotaxi network. It could be a number of other things, Starlink included. But when his personal brand breaks through, kind of, I would say, the Steve Jobs level, imagine if Steve Jobs were actually solving humanitarian things or humanity scale issues instead of just the iPhone, which was huge. And people love to death him. They think that he's the best person that has ever lived. Imagine when they actually realize what Elon has been doing. Yeah. And not only that, but also the absolute grit and drive that he's been showing this whole time. Being able to go back and look and see, like, oh my gosh, he was sleeping on the factory floor. They almost went out of business a bunch of times. He was scrapping
his last money.
Yeah, you know, he was fighting so hard to do this, and look where we've gotten. I think that those things are also going to be helping anything that Tesla does or touches, because I think it's undeniable even now that he as a brand is adding value to Tesla.
I think there's so much pushback against him because he makes other leaders of companies look like crap. I got to be honest. Like, he's making more money than they are, and yet he's not doing it to make more money. It shows us that our system that we have now was designed by a bunch of, you know, Harvard MBAs back in the 80s about counting beans, and that's not how you should run a company. That's how you run a company to, like, make it more efficient, I guess, after it's gotten through its growth phase, but that's not how you grow new companies. And I think we're going to be, learning about Elon's methods for decades and centuries to come.
It's interesting, like, when I think about, like, my own investing and I, kind of like this, the opportunities that we have, let's say, that come along where we can invest in a generational company, a company that just, like, you know, defines or a whole generation is using its products and loving its products and et cetera. It's like, it's not often that that happens, but then it's also not often that a company from a person like Elon Musk, you know, is available where you can participate in it. And part of me is like, when I look out 10 years down the road, I'm like, do I want to be invested in Elon and what he's doing? You know? And right. It's like a pretty obvious question, you know? I mean, pretty obviously answer.
He's kind of ruined other investing for me because I want to diversify because I've learned early on, like, I guess you should diversify. But then I look around and I'm like, all these other CEOs don't seem to even get it, so why would I invest in them, you know?
It almost like pity diversifying.
Yeah, exactly.
You almost get the sense, to a certain extent, that you're it's almost like you're investing in humanity.
Yeah.
That if what I'm doing now gets us to Mars, and Mars means that humanity is, you know, twice as safe against total annihilation, you're like, I've never been able to do that before with an investment. Like, you might have, I don't know, if you maybe you thought, like, oh, I'll invest in Raytheon and that'll protect my country or something like that. But I don't think anyone's ever said, like, this will protect humanity in quite the same way. And I don't think humanity has ever faced such existential threats, aside from nuclear holocaust and climate change. It never was at that level. But now that we are at that level, having a leader that is pushing through at least some of those feelings is really beyond what we're used to.
I think we were looking for a leader. It hasn't come from politics. We were looking for a JFK-type leader who would give us a big goal to work towards, and we just haven't had it for decades. So now we finally get that, and I think a lot of us have just gotten excited again because we're like, well, we don't have to vote for the guy, but we can kind of vote with our shares.
Yeah, I mean, I agree on a lot of aspects of that because, like, in some ways what Elon is doing with Tesla, with SpaceX, and some of his other companies, it's really like country level, you know, like, and even not just one country, like world, global level, like the impact that Tesla is having, but will have potentially in the next decade in terms of climate change. This is like not just a small company. This is like, we're talking about impact of many, many countries, you know, if not more. And
To go too nuts, but I mean, you could almost replace some of the things that, like, replace the United Nations with the word Tesla or Elon or SpaceX. Like, the United Nations is launching satellites to provide internet around the world. You'd be like, oh, yes, of course, that makes sense. The United Nations is building electric cars to prevent climate change. You'd be like, oh, of course, that kind of makes sense. And yet, no, it's pretty much one guy pushing to do all of these things along with, you know, thousands of other people, but tiny in the scale of the number of people who do want to do the right things, who are part of governments, presumably for the right reasons and to make the world better, and all the people of all the world's NGOs and nonprofits. It's just like, wow, that this guy is able to accomplish some of these things that could be some of the most impactful human activities ever.
And it just makes you mad at other corporations because you look at them and you're like, well, you were bigger than Tesla when they started and you already had experience doing a lot of this stuff and yet you didn't have any goal to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's that whole point you're making about the whole mission-driven kind of focus of Elon and his companies, whereas these other companies, you look at, what are you really trying to do? You know, like, is it just really just making some money, returning to shareholders, like just growing the company, like what are you all about? But when you like look at Tesla, it's like so glaring, and also with SpaceX, etc. It's like the mission, it defines the company, you know, and everything is geared around that mission, and it's so unique in a sense and different in our world of capitalism and just, you know, money and greed and just grow whatever. It's something that is seen, hey, that's not the most important thing, is just to grow a company, you know. There are bigger problems at hand. But then you combine that with kind of this whole business aspect, the product, the business model, this whole other engine where you're not just trying to solve global problems through a nonprofit, right? And through educational literature out there. You're actually using the power of the market of capitalism and products and services to build billions of dollars, if not eventually trillions of dollars of revenue, right? And that, and to solve these problems. It's just, it's mind blowing in some ways. It's like, what's going on here? You know?
Well, it's also mind blowing that he's told us what the plan is. Like, I'm using Starlink as a cash cow to make money to get me to Mars. Like, I don't really, I just, this is an easy one. Like, that's amazing to think about, because for most people, that's like a hard problem to crack. And yet he's like, oh, I can already see how that's going to work. And it is working before our eyes.
And you had companies that wanted to do similar things. You had Facebook trying to develop, you know, solar drones to provide internet around the world. And it's like, and you didn't do it? You're Facebook, right? Like, you have all the money in the world. There's nothing stopping you, and yet you weren't able to accomplish it.
Yeah, and this goes back to, I mean, Facebook is owned by Zuckerberg, but, I mean, all other companies, they're just beholden to their shareholders who want a quarterly answer. Okay, what's going on this quarter? And if you run a company like that, you're just not seeing the distance. You're just looking down at the road, you know, the next 20 feet.
Right. And I feel like it's the same thing with investments.
I hope that conversation was helpful. If it was, please consider liking the video to help spread the word and also subscribing to my channel for future updates. Part 2 and 3 of the series will be coming out in the coming days. On my channel, we're looking at the world through various lenses, trying to get beneath the surface of things. All my YouTube videos are also available as an audio podcast. Just search for Dave Lee on Investing at your favorite podcast app. Also, I'm active on Twitter and my handle is HeyDave7. I hope to see you in my next video. Thanks.